Hi, and welcome to Autism Hope Library. So we brought him back because you guys were so excited about his last interview. And we're like, all right, you guys kept saying, bring him back. So he's back. Ron K. Kaufman, the author of Autism Breakthrough and also the co-creator of the ACT protocol. So can we talk about, before we get started, Ron, and welcome. Everyone wanted you back. Here you are.
Hello.
We want to talk about for those that might have missed your first one, and if you did, go back and watch that one. But let's talk about, what is the ACT protocol?
Yeah, so it's just something that me and Kate C. Wilde created. We spent actually quite a long time creating it, and it's basically designed to help those who have a loved one of truly of any age. We work with a lot of people who have adults, but anyone on the autism spectrum who is going through a crisis, whether that manifests as, you know, hitting or being really aggressive or cursing and saying, I hate you, or having real disciplinary issues in school. Maybe they've even been kicked out of school, constant fighting with siblings, or maybe they're having just intense anxiety going on, or maybe a big transition in their life, like puberty or a move or something like that. So the ACT protocol was really designed to help turn that around. And it's not a long-term program. It's a short-term protocol. It's designed to go over just a couple of weeks of action, 2 to 3 weeks, to really turn things around. And it's based on the idea that what's going on with our loved ones is not some sort of it's not a chosen behavior. They're trying to be difficult or, you know, misbehave. It's not actually even because of their autism per se. It's actually the clash between the different way that they process things and what we could call the imposed situation, which is the environment or circumstance that they're exposed to, usually without their say-so. That clash can cause something that we call a neuro crash, which manifests in all those ways I was just saying. And so then the idea becomes, okay, if we know that a neuro crash is really what's happening, then the question becomes not how to modify the behavior, but how do we actually prevent the neuro crash in the first place and sort of get at the root cause of things.
And so if you guys missed, like I said, the first interview we did with Ron regarding the ACT protocol, definitely go back because you talked a lot about neuro crashes last time, which I think was really, really helpful. So now let's dive in. Okay, so in the course that you and Kate C. Wilde teach, you talk about 7 causes of crisis. What are those?
Yeah, we get into this in the ACT Live Rescue course, which is like a live course we have. Actually, I think we also touch on it in the pre-course sort of online thing that we do. But anyway, there's 7 main causes of crises, which are also the 7 main causes of neuro crashes, since they're kind of one and the same. And basically, I'll sort of bear with me a little bit. I just want to go through a few of these. So one is an adult or a caregiver, instructor, parent who is emotionally agitated. Maybe they're frustrated, scared, stressed out, might not even be at the person with autism, but that is going to feel to the person with autism like a sensory assault. I actually recently had a consultation with a 14-year-old named Van, who was on the spectrum, but he could articulate all the things he was feeling. And he would say that when his mother got angry, and he didn't have like an angry mother. His mother was just a regular person, but we all get angry sometimes, but he said when she was upset or angry, it felt to him like a tidal wave crashing into him, and he couldn't focus. He couldn't find his words. It like really messed with him. So that's the first thing, are the emotional agitation on the part of the adult or person with the person on the spectrum. It's really important. And it's not about hiding that emotional agitation. It's actually about not actually having it, at least not while you're with the person on the spectrum. So that's number one. Number two is being pushed. And I don't mean physically. I hope I don't mean physically, but it really, it manifests in a few different ways, such as when the person on the spectrum's no is not being respected, whether that's a verbal no or some nonverbal way of expressing no. Also, when they're trying to be pushed into doing something like their homework or sitting at the table during a meal and they're not ready for that or they're not up for that. And the third way, which I call the arch enemy of autism, but it's the third part of this pushing, is rushing. Rushing is the arch enemy of autism. If you want to drive your loved one to a neuro crash, do lots of rushing so that it brings in agitation, all these other things that cause problems. So that's another one. Now, number three is invasion of personal space, which is anything from unwanted affection, which I know we do out of love, but if you're hugging and kissing your loved one and they don't want to be hugged or kissed, that's going to invade their personal space, going to push them closer to a neuro crash. If you pick them up and move them, if they're a smaller child, if you're too close to them, And I like to say, take in their stuff. If they're trying to play or arrange something and you take it, that's gonna also start to push them closer to a neuro crash. Number four is sensory overload. One of the things I talked about in the last interview is what we call S4, super sensitive sensory systems. And when there's a lot of sights and sounds and even the way their clothes feel against their skin, smells, that can build up and be very overwhelming over time and cause our loved ones to hit a sensory wall, which then results in a neuro crash. Number five is unpredictability. By the way, who's the most unpredictable? We neurotypicals are. We have different moods. We say dinner's going to be at 6, but then we work late, so it's at 7. So there's all, we don't always tell the truth, us neurotypicals, not always, right? So this creates an environment that can feel very precarious to our loved ones. And again, move them closer to a neuro crash. So we want to be more rather than less predictable. Number six is what we call blurry boundaries. This is an interesting one because what often happens is that most people set a combination of too many boundaries. So they're actually exerting too much control, but they're actually then inconsistent with most of those boundaries. So then it also creates that precariousness. So we actually advocate scaling back, having only a few boundaries, but then being 100% consistent on that. So the blurry boundaries is going to create more of that precariousness that's going to move our loved ones closer to a neuro crash. Two more, I just want to say really quick. Actually, only one more.
I'm like, I thought there were seven.
There's only seven. Sorry.
There's a bonus one. I thought maybe you might have had a bonus.
I don't have a bonus one. I'll come up with one. The seventh one is something we call a biostorm, which obviously bio meaning biological and storm meaning it's super intense, but it's also temporary. And that can be anything from, Kristen, you know about this more than anybody, but it can be anything from something in the diet, but it doesn't have to be only dietary. It can be actually a medication that worked at the beginning, but now the child or adult develops a reaction to it later. I've seen that happen many times. It can be fumes. There was one, actually an adult who was having a lot of neuro crashes on Fridays. The parents were like, why does this keep happening? Well, that was the day the house was clean. So it was like filled with microparticles of all the cleaning stuff, right? So there's that. And even things like, I've been surprised at the effect of dryer sheets. They can sometimes be super intense, both on the skin and on the nose. So those can, biostorms is like the third one. And all those things together, again, it's not that it's one of those happens for 1 minute and it causes neuro crashes. It's that actually there's aspects of all those happening throughout the person on the spectrum's day. So the mission of the ACT protocol is actually to address all seven and slowly pull them down so that we're not creating that overflow that causes chronic neuro crashes.
Okay, I love that. I love that you guys have broke it down and I'm like going, yep, I've had that one. Yep, I've had that one. Yep, I've done that. For me, the one that really stood out was the rushing. I promise you, if you rush your kid of any age, I think even neurotypical or those with autism, I feel like you're just going to get somebody that has anxiety and they can't process that. They can feel that energy. I promise you, we are always late, always, when it comes to anything I have to do with my son. And I love him, but I cannot rush him. Like I have just learned, and I just try to put in that kind of like a buffer, right? And so where I let whoever we're supposed to go meet, I'm like, okay, we're going to go between this time and this time. And I feel like that's really helped me because then I'm like, well, they already know. I promise you, our kids know when we want to leave. They know when we're running late. They know when we want them to hurry. And for whatever reason, sometimes I think it's just too much for them to process. That has helped me so much to just go, huh, we'll get there when we get there, you know? But again, putting that buffer in for yourself, or try getting them ready like earlier if you know they could get, longer. Also the other thing is putting that buffer. If sometimes they get ready too fast and you put a big buffer in and then you're like, oh crap. Now what I'm supposed to do, I'm at the doctor's 45 minutes too early. And I already know the doctors are going to be running 20 minutes late. So then you have to kind of have like a longer route. Like, trust me, I have like had all these different scenarios happen where we're too early. And I notice we're too early. Well, they don't know exactly where we're going. So I just take a longer route and I go around and around and oh, now we're on time. So again, I love when you said rushing because I would say 100% never, sometimes, never, maybe, always that would be a trigger for us. So so let's talk about the ACT protocol that has, I love how you talk about this, the 5 turnaround tools. What are those?
Yeah. And so that this goes back to the whole idea that this is not like you have to turn your life upside down for the next year of your life. This is about, you have to make some real changes for the next couple of weeks, because the key thing is to get your loved one out of the sort of cycle of chronic neuro crashes. It's not like they're never going to have one again, right? If someone comes to me and says every 2 months, my loved one has a neuro crash, I would actually say, you probably don't need the ACT protocol, right? It's the cycle that's, you know, it's happening daily. It's happening multiple times a day, whatever, multiple times a week. So we have these 5 turnaround tools, and it's really important to do all 5 of them, actually. We focus on this in our courses. So number one, I'm not going to do a detailed explanation of each, but just to give you an idea, number one is called use socioception. And that is, we touched on that, and actually in our last interview, it actually enables you to use a skill called socioception, designed to detect your loved one's hidden SOS, which stands for signals of stress, which then, if you can detect those early enough, you can circumvent the neuro crash before it happens. So that's number one. Number two is called, I like this one, it's called ceasefire. And it really is, it's ceasefire. It's really about it ending the control battles that are also massively contributing to neuro crashes. Listen to this. We had this mom. She just took the ACT Live Rescue course that we did in September. She had a 32-year-old on the spectrum, and so this is 3 meals a day. Just like imagine this. So he's 32, and this had been going on for more than a decade. 3 meals a day, every time they have a meal, gigantic neuro crash, explosion, aggression, super intensive, 3 times a day for over a decade, right? And so she takes our course. She steps in the kitchen with Adam, closes her eyes and notices she can hear like the hum of the fridge and some other things. So she just decides, you know what? Okay, ceasefire. Instead of having a battle over having the food in the kitchen, we're going to have the food in his bedroom. That's where we're going to have the meals. And done. Like literally no neuro crashes, no issues around the meals anymore. Like this thing that was a huge part of their life 3 times a day for over a decade is just not happening anymore. It's really cool. And
yeah, that's like life-changing for that mom.
Yes, and for her 32-year-old, right? For
yeah, both but of I them. Mean, she was probably like dreading eating. Like I would be dreading eating like every single time. And yeah. So, and the nice thing is it's not like it was in the car. Like, can you imagine if it would have been in the car and every time they had to eat, she had to take a car ride? Like, I think it's fantastic. It's in his room. It's like, you could then like start making it in the living room and then maybe just the dining room, you know what I mean? Or figure out where the less noises for sensory, you know, input that's happening, because that's such a great, like, I feel like that's like, no pun intended, but like aha moment, right? Like I feel I just think it's a great awakening for them to notice that, because sometimes it's right in front of you, but you don't see it.
Yeah. And you know, with ceasefire, with that concept, there's a combination of, there's a bunch of things we can give more control to our loved one and say yes to that we're not like that. And then there are some things that we don't really want to say yes to. Let's say they're eating all the ice cream in the freezer if we let them. Okay, those are situations where still under ceasefire, we would remove the battlefield altogether. Like we just wouldn't have ice cream, for instance, in the house. So we would take away the things that we're fighting over. And all of that is designed to reduce or eliminate control battles. So anyway, that's number two. Number three is now that we've ceased fire, next step is we got to make peace. You got to cease fire before you can make peace. So basically that's all about that, what I was mentioning before, which is that emotional agitation, and about getting out of this vicious cycle of they get agitated, then we get more agitated, then they get more agitated, then boom. So this is about, we take our level down so they can take their level down, so we can take our level down. So it's really about, we have these particular questions, we call them rise above questions, which are designed to sort of connect the part of you that's freaking out with a back part of your brain that sees more of the big picture and kind of calm everything down. So that's number three. Number four is called eliminate intensifiers. Now this is interesting. So there's certain crisis intensifiers, and these are things outside of your relationship with your loved one. So they are sort of sitting like little bombs in your child's schedule or your child's environment, and they're exacerbating and making more frequent these kinds of neuro crashes. And then the last thing, which is number five, is we say nurture more. Now, I know everyone feels like they nurture their loved ones, but here's the thing. Very few people are nurturing and loving and helping their loved one on the spectrum in a way that feels like nurture, love, and help to them. Like, we all love them. We bend over backwards for them. But are we loving them in a way that really feels like love to them? So we have these things called, and this will sound familiar to you, Kristen, because maybe I'm sure you've heard of it. You know, the five love languages, right? Everybody's heard of that, right? So we have these things called the five autism love languages, and they're different ways to translate nurturing and love into a language that our loved ones can understand. And the point of that is to really create the kinds of positive interactions in between the crises that strengthen and create a more like crisis-proof relationship so that it's more resilient, so that you can be a person that can help them when they start to get close to a crisis instead of having that trust deficit that can often come up.
Well, I think these are tools that all of us need in our tool belt. And I think when you get the diagnosis, and let's say your child's 2 or 3, imagine if the clinician or the doctor that gave you the diagnosis said, and by the way, here's the ACT protocol. Because honestly, it's the behaviors that you first notice. I can't imagine any other parent, you know, disagreeing like with that. It's always a behavior. You're going to notice that that's not typical for what the peers are doing. And that's what brings you to the doctors to begin with. And so imagine if they said, okay, here you go. Like, this is, and I love that it's not like long-term. It's just, and I also love that I don't really need the ACT protocol right now. Like when you said that, I was like, oh, I actually don't qualify for this protocol.
Yes, that's so right. Excited. Talk to everybody. Absolutely.
No, but what I love about it is, I mean, you've known my story. You've met my son. There's been many years I needed this protocol, right? But I don't need it right now. And I'm grateful. I hope I love you, Ron, but I hope I never need this protocol ever again.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Really, me too.
I hope that's so beautiful. And honestly, the families that are doing the protocol, I hope it's a one and done. Like, I hope it's just kind of like, hey, you know, because I think having that relationship, getting to do things with your kiddo of any age, like my son's 19 and we're doing things for the first time, a lot of our first right now. And it's, you know, it's so exciting for me because, you know, I always kept holding on and waiting and waiting. And I think I'm more giddy. I mean, he doesn't even know that I've been waiting. He didn't even know this thing existed, whatever I wanted to do. And now he's at that, you know, part of his life and the chapter in his life that we get to do stuff like that. And so, you know, he's still definitely far, you know, delayed from his peers, but oh my gosh, what I have with him is just amazing. And I love it. And if you would have been talking to me 2 years ago, I probably would have been crying during this whole interview. Cause I would have been like, hold on, let me write that down. Hold on, let me write that down. But instead I can completely understand what the families are going through. And, you know, I would never wish that upon anybody, because I think getting the diagnosis of autism is one thing, you know, maybe doing repetitive behaviors or having lack of eye contact or not being able to socialize with peers, picky eaters. I mean, the list goes on and on, right? But being, you know, afraid or not knowing what to do in a crisis is something that I don't think anybody can prepare you for if you've never gone through it. And now it's great because now if you're going through it, it's like, hey, you got Ron and Kate that are saying, hey guys, don't worry. We're going to walk you through this. Yeah. And it's not always going to be perfect. And even probably some of your bullet points may not work for this, but then they have to try a different one. And that's what I love is that it's not a one size fits all, but you have many different tools to say, okay, if this didn't work, try that. Okay, great. That didn't work. Let's try this. And just to be able to reach for that when you need that, I think that's fabulous. I can't say enough good things about that. So again, I'm glad I don't need it right now, but I did 2 years ago. So how do people find you guys?
Yeah, they can just, honestly, the best thing is just go to our website. So it's just Autism Crisis Turnaround, autismcrisisturnaround.com. And they can, first of all, there's a lot of information. There's a free video that they can watch. There's a step that they can sign up with where they get some precursors to these turnaround tools that they can do at home. And then they have the live course that they can sign up for. They can actually scroll all the way to the bottom and go right to that if they want to. But if they just go to autismcrisisturnaround.com, it sort of lays the whole thing out.
And, you know, do you have any final message that you want to, you know, leave for parents right now? I know the parents that, you know, are probably going through it are probably crying. And because I know even as I talk, I still get teary-eyed just thinking about it because it's still so close to that surface, right? So the parents that are going through it, just please know that like there is help out there and our hearts are with you because I really do not believe anybody should ever have to go through, you know, some of this fear that we go through, right? With when we have those huge meltdowns. So, you know, what message do you want to leave with them?
Well, look, I would just say that, like, no matter how it might feel dark or scary, or you might feel a little bit lost, right? I would second what you said. There is a way out. I really don't believe that anything that's happening is inevitable and has to happen this way. Oftentimes, like, the good thing is that oftentimes when we feel stuck in this, it's actually just because we've been, it's not our fault, but like we've been misinformed about the best way to sort of tackle this. So then we might tackle it in a way that exacerbates it or doesn't help it. And the good news is, like, that's the reason. So that doesn't mean it's not your fault. It's not your child or adult on the spectrum's fault. There's actually a way out. It's just that maybe you hadn't had access to that before. So if you love your child or adult on the spectrum and you want to help them with this, there's absolutely a way out here.
I love that. So again, Ron, thank you so much for taking the time and helping our families. Just thank you for all that you do to make it just a better world, honestly. Like, because at the end of the day, we just want to be happy. We want our families to be happy, you know, regardless of whatever quote unquote label that somebody has, because I just think that's what it is, right? It's just a label. They're still your kiddo. But I love that you're out there, you and Kate are out there saying, hey, like, you know, we're here and we're not giving up. So thank you for being here today.
Thanks.
And to everyone watching, until next time. Bye, guys.